Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Missing Frames. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge, and for this episode, I am joined by the beautiful John Mills.
Hello, everybody.
A fellow nerd partier.
Yes, a nerd partier in the extreme. One of the founding members of the nerd party.
Thank you so much. He doesn't actually have a British accent. Please
not every
ignore
day.
That.
Not sometimes.
Every day. We're also joined by Mr. Alex Beard.
Oh, hello.
How are you doing, Alex?
Oh, I'm doing just dandy. Great.
We are happy to have you here because this episode, again, will focus on your education.
My lack of film. I'm the anti-Criterion Collection.
It's true.
I'm floating in a world of just blank walls with no televisions or screens.
Would Lethal Weapon qualify for the Criterion Collection?
I'll
be interested to get your opinion to see
excellent,
if you think it.
Excellent.
It
That's
does.
What we're here for.
I think first of all, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
If Armageddon
can be on the Criterion Collection, yes.
Yeah, okay. Anything's up for grabs.
Maybe not
now.
That I think that's something that they may have kind of brushed under the rug a little bit, but at one point Armageddon was on the Criterion Collection. So let's never forget
right
that.
Up there with Kurosawa. Good
that's
job,
right.
guys. Good job.
There we go. Yeah. But we can talk about that all day because Armageddon is a beautiful film, but we're here to talk about another little ditty called Lethal Weapon. Which is we're keeping with our holiday tradition, even though BuzzFeed, I can't remember if it was BuzzFeed or another one of those hipster nonsense periodicals that I read frequently.
Yes.
On the regular.
That and Vox.
Vox. They were talking about how they had people vote and say, is this a Christmas movie? Is this not? And Die Hard and Lethal Weapon were both voted as not Christmas movies. And I am here to say they are Christmas movies.
That is.
And we are going to talk about Lethal Weapon as if it is a Christmas movie. It's part of our
holiday. It is a Christmas movie.
It is. There's no question.
No.
That
really annoys me because the thing is, it got a little tiring for a little while for people talking about how Die Hard's their Christmas. Oh, I always watch Die Hard at Christmas.
Yep.
Yeah, we get it. But now that's just all part of that blowback now where everybody's like, no, it's not a Christmas. You know,
I'm going to go on a campaign that removes the Polar Express from being considered
I think
Christmas
you should, because if we're going to remove these movies, we
exactly.
might as well.
I mean,
we
how well far, what is the, where is the line, people?
It's true.
Where's the line?
It's true. We've got to find the line somewhere. But we are, so we're talking about Lethal Weapon, which is a Christmas movie, as we've established.
Is.
And it's funny you bring up Die Hard. Something I forget is that Lethal Weapon came out before a Die Hard.
Yes.
Because Die Hard gets all the credit, and it is an amazing movie, and it deserves the credit.
Yeah.
But Lethal Weapon almost gets kind of, I don't want to say forgotten, but in the wake of Die Hard, it kind of does.
Having lived through the era, being the old man that I am, what I can tell you is that Die Hard, actually, I snuck into. Lethal Weapon was just early enough that I still couldn't sneak into
right.
it. But with Lethal Weapon, it got wiped out in the tsunami wave of Die Hard, specifically because Die Hard was a sleeper hit. Nobody expected Die Hard. It came out at the end of August. It was like 20th Century Fox was like, yeah, and here's Die Hard 2.
Right.
And then it became this huge smash success. And so people started looking at Die Hard as the one to copy.
Yep.
Because it was like, oh, well, there's the, you know, just like Hollywood just always follows,
yep.
you know, the train and stuff like
yes.
that. And eventually it all culminates with Speed. And we all started asking ourselves,
and
what
then
we were
Speed
doing.
2 Cruise Control just took it to a whole other level.
Yes.
Action movies have never been the same.
It was called The Bus That Couldn't Slow Down.
But I had never seen Lethal Weapon. It just wasn't on my radar. And when I went to film school, I heard about Shane Black, and this is the screenplay for Lethal Weapon is one of those Cinderella stories where it's like Shane Black was living in LA, he was a film student, he wrote the spec script, and then it just kind of worked its way through the ranks till it got to producer Joel Silver, who was like, let's do it. And then all of a sudden Shane Black has sold this script, and it's a fun read. The script itself has a lot of like just a lot of smart alecky comments. There's one where he's like, the boys arrive at a mansion that looks a lot like the one I will own if this movie is a hit. But it has lots of things in there, so it's very fun to read. But that was how I heard about it. It was just in my screenwriting classes. Like, here's an example of just like a really great, well-structured, really tight screenplay. And my friend Levi and I were just like, Lethal Weapon, we've never seen these. We've just got to watch it.
Yeah.
So we bought the first one and watched it and just loved it. Like, we were immediately on board. And we're like, let's go get the other ones. And truthfully, I even though I think the first one's definitely my favorite and definitely the best, I was really partial to all of them. And I haven't watched the fourth one in a while.
Fourth one is a train wreck. The fourth
really,
one is
you think
awful.
So?
The fourth one's awful, and I was one of the few dissenting voices that hated the second one.
Wow.
I thought the second one was
I
just...
I like the second one just as much as the first one.
No, the only thing that the second one is good for is to keep going, diplomatic community. Like, that's it. Like, I just, I can't, you know, I'll have to go back and rewatch it, I guess, but I
not
I remember,
even the, well, I don't want to spoil it, but the toilet scene? I mean, okay,
you can have a good scene in a movie, but the movie still sucks.
Ugh.
Okay,
that
scene's great.
Is so good.
Who doesn't
that
love an
even
exploding
if the rest,
toilet?
Even if the rest of the movie, if I were to humor you and say the rest of the movie did suck, that scene just by itself would lift everything up.
No, it wouldn't.
Alex is just sitting over here like, what? Why
exploding
is this
toilets?
Exploding.
Is
why aren't
Jim
we?
Carrey
why
movie?
Are we watching Lethal Weapon 2?
Yeah. I need to get on this.
Yeah,
but John, so what? Did you see Lethal Weapon in theaters?
No.
Like, what was your experience with Lethal Weapon?
No, Die Hard, I snuck into because I was just barely a teenager the summer that came out. And we bought tickets for, we bought tickets for Clean and Sober because that was PG-13. And so nobody thought anything. It was like, 13-year-old's going to see a movie about alcoholism. Okay. And
that's a movie gone down in history, too.
Oh, hasn't it?
Definitely a lot of top tens.
Lethal Weapon is just early enough. I wound up seeing it on video because my brother worked in a video store. Mm. That means I saw a ton of stuff that I wasn't supposed to see. And because, you know, he'd rent it, he'd bring it home, and he'd be like, shut up, don't tell mom and dad. I was like, you got it, boss. We're on board here. But I'll actually be really interested to watch it because I don't know that I've ever seen it in the proper aspect ratio. I think that I've only probably seen it on television, so it's probably been cropped and panned and scanned.
Oh, wow. Okay. So we have the director's cut, too, because I think it's the only version they've released on DVD or Blu-ray.
Interesting.
I don't know if there's much. I think the opening's a little different, and then there's a specific scene that I love that we'll talk about when we come back.
Well, I can tell you that with any Donner movie, what I'll be looking for is the screw-up where you can see the camera crew in something, because that happens 100% of the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So my only request for going into this blind to view this film is that we just recreate sneaking you into the movie. So I'm going to play the usher that is going to let you into the film, and then you're going to switch theaters my living room.
So we're just going to go over to your neighbor's house. Yeah.
Exactly. I just want to make this a full experience. I want you to relive the magic.
Well, that would be for Die Hard. With this, I am recreating the experience by watching it on video at home.
Okay.
In a basement.
Perfect. Good.
With no family around. So.
But Alex, you haven't seen Lethal Weapon.
No.
Has there been any interest in seeing Lethal Weapon, or what do you know about this movie?
Buddy cop film.
Yeah.
Not Beverly Hills Cop. That's about the extent. Danny Glover, not Donald Glover's father. Donald Glover's soon to be Lando Calrissian. Uh-huh. That's the extent of my knowledge of this. Mel Gibson.
There you go. I was going to say, you don't even know Mel Gibson's in it.
No,
wow.
That's pretty much it.
Okay. And then any interest level in seeing, like, is this at all on your radar of like, someday
I
do want to see this?
Sure. I am sure in my lifetime I've caught 30-second glimpses of this film when it's been on TNT because they know drama. sponsored by. Just going to plug that in real quick. Just kidding. We're not at all. But anyway, no, I think I am going to enjoy this film. I just never got around to watching it.
All right.
Which is sad.
It is sad.
But
and then
we're
you
about
have,
to we're about to change that.
We're about to change that. And there are three more, I mean, to keep going. John isn't a fan of the other three. I am.
Oh, no. Lethal Weapon 3.
Oh, you
did? I had a huge crush on Rene Russo, so I'm all on board with
that
John,
one. But, John, a single hot actress does not a film make.
Rene Russo.
But a single toilet does make a film worth watching.
And this is the key difference in our personalities, Sean. Right
there. That sums it up right there.
That encapsulates everything.
All right. So looking forward to seeing Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excited for it. All right. Cool. So let's go ahead. Let's break down a couple facts. So this came out, as John was mentioning, this is early 1987. Mm-hmm. So March 6th. directed by Richard Donner, who is a personal favorite of mine, mainly because of Superman. Yeah. But he also directed The Omen, which is one of my favorite horror movies, and The Goonies, which is John's personal favorite film.
It's my life story, actually. My life story.
But as we mentioned, so Shane Black was kind of up-and-coming film student, and this movie kind of broke him into the industry in a really big way. Now, his first draft was much darker. It was a very relentless and kind of dark, and he was not a big fan of it. And there are a couple rewrites to kind of spice it up a little bit. So Richard Donner, he sent the script to Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. They both loved it. And he said he kind of sat them down just to have a reading. They went through it. And Donner said he was just in awe because they kind of brought it to a whole other level. And what he said was, it took about 2 hours. The reading took about 2 hours. And by the time we were done, I was in seventh heaven. They found innuendos. They found laughter where I never saw it. They found tears where they didn't exist before. And most importantly, they found a relationship all in just one reading. So if you ask about casting, it was magical, just total dynamite. And I really think, I mean, that is completely, I mean, I wasn't there. I wish I was there to see that. But this movie really, really works because of that chemistry between the two of them.
No doubt. No doubt. This movie is, the casting is really key. And I think that what's going to be really interesting to see about it is, you know, Mel Gibson has always been a bit nutty. Mm. And that sort of manic energy is what made him a star. And so, you know, and of course, you know, he's had his trouble with alcohol and stuff like that.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see the young Mel back again.
Yeah.
Not the Mad Max Mel, but like the on the cusp of stardom Mel.
Yeah.
It'll be really interesting.
I got to sit down with my wife, Sarah, a few years ago. And for some reason, she was like, oh, let's watch Lethal Weapon. She'd never seen it. So I showed it to her and she absolutely loved it. But that was something we both kind of noticed in watching. It was like, it's really good to just see Mel Gibson just in a part with no strings attached back in the good old days. And then, so one more fact, and then we'll get to this, but this is a fun little tidbit. So Richard Donner's directing credit, and this is not a spoiler, this is the opening scene. So it appears right after the woman, Amanda Hunsaker, leaps to her death. And this is a reference
spoilers.
To a joke. This is a reference to a joke that Richard Donner films often have sequences of people falling, like in The Omen, Margot Kidder, and Superman.
Yep.
So they put the directing credit right after.
Yeah, Goonies, they jump to get away at the end.
Exactly.
Don't they? Yeah.
So there you go. But all right. So I think we've covered Lethal Weapon a little bit. Alex, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Well, let's get to it then.
Now available to own on video cassette.
So while we're off watching Lethal Weapon, let's take a moment to talk a little bit about something called Loot Crate. Loot Crate, what's that, you ask? Well, it's only just the most amazing thing. They offer an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Less than $20. So whether you're shopping for the geek in your life, or let's just say you are the geek in your life, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. And every month there's a different theme, new exclusive items, and you can only get them from Loot Crate. And right now we are offering a special deal. Now this is until December 19th, which is technically the day after this episode is airing. So if you're listening, you need to get to Loot Crate right now. Go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty and enter the code nerdparty and you will save off this awesome deal we're doing. And we're talking about a revolution. That's right. We're getting Beatles style up in here. Fight the power and pave the way for a brighter tomorrow with December's Rebellious Crate. And that features exclusive items from Assassin's Creed. That's Michael Fassbender. You love Michael Fassbender. Who are you if you don't love? I mean, he's amazing. And it's not just Assassin's Creed. We've got Mr. Robot, Firefly. I'm telling you, Michael Fassbender, Joss Whedon. Who doesn't love these guys? And then we also have an exclusive Funko Pop figure and our monthly t-shirt and pen. So again, go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, enter the code nerdparty, and you will save. Now what do you say, let's get back to the episode and talk a little bit about Lethal Weapon. And we are back. We've watched the movie. The question on everyone's minds, Alex, what did you think of Lethal Weapon?
Oh my gosh. What a thrill. What a thrill that was. I thoroughly enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, good.
I want to like watch the other ones now.
You should. I mean, I
skip two.
I think two is just as good. Yeah. Some would say it's better. I don't know if I'm one of them, but I'm partial to all of them. I think the first one is definitely the best one, though.
I think the relationship is really great. Like, I love how Danny Glover is just completely apathetic about everything. But then at the end, he becomes like a warm soul, and it's like true, like, buddy.
I know. It's great. Well, it's kind of it was a refinement. It was definitely a refinement of kind of the buddy cop movie. I mean, I know we have Beverly Hills Cop in 1984, and then there's, of course, I'm sure there are a couple other examples I just can't think of. But.
Yeah, but I mean, Beverly Hills Cop was, I mean, that's a solo guy. You know, yeah, he meets up with, you know, Judge Reinhold, who's all wacky and everything. And all that.
Right.
But that was really just an Eddie Murphy vehicle.
True.
This actually, the two leads have equal weight. You know, they actually are, you know, reliant on each other, and, you know, to Alex's point, the chemistry really is what keeps the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, this is my first time watching it in a very long time.
When was the last time you watched it, you think?
Can't even recall. It was so long ago. And what's really interesting is coming back at it is, like, you know, certain things come back out and you're like, oh yeah, I remember this. And I think at one point, like, when they rolled the car battery out, I was like, oh, this scene.
Yep.
And they just become so iconic. But what really came across to me is that if there's one knock I've had of Donner through the years is the through line isn't always handled as well as I, you know, like, it's a product of its time. And I think, to get back to the question you had before we watched it, I think the reason Die Hard holds up and, you know, stays in people's minds more than Lethal Weapon is, yeah, this is great and the chemistry works and all of that, but Die Hard is more cohesive.
Yeah.
And that's what I would say.
I did get that. And, you know, I still enjoy this movie, watching it again. But this time I definitely did notice it kind of, especially in the third act, it really starts to just jump. It's like, all right, we got to get moving.
We got 20 minutes left.
Yeah,
guys.
That would be one thing that I would say for sure. Like, the first 30 minutes of that film, it doesn't drag, but the speed drastically increases towards the end. It's like, all right, if we're walking at a leisurely pace, by the end, we are running.
Yeah.
We're running at
the
a
first
full
couple
sprint.
Acts, they do a really, I mean, they kind of take their time. They build this family life, and then they kind of introduce Riggs, his whole thing with his wife and how suicidal he is. Something I was going to mention beforehand that I wanted to save till after. Apparently, I could be wrong about this, but I'm almost positive what we watched was the director's cut, and the scene of him about to shoot himself looking at his the photo of his wife was not in the theatrical version.
It was, but I think the thing is, my memory isn't going to be reliable, but I remember the scene where he's looking at her and he, you know, and he's got the gun. I think that this was longer.
Okay.
That's
completely possible. I'm not 100% on that.
I never recalled him putting the gun in his mouth. I remember him putting it to his head and staring at it and then leaving. And I think, I mean, the way that it played this time, like, I noticed all of us were, like, dead silent. Like, that scene is an incredible acting scene.
Yeah. It's a really powerful scene. And, again, just thinking about that scene, it's a great scene. But when you think about it in the context and where the film ends up by its third act, it almost, I was watching it again, I was like, I love that scene so much. But it almost makes sense to me that Donner or whoever would say, yeah, maybe just lose a couple minutes out of that.
Yeah.
And just looking
at
the full picture. Yeah. Because it does really, you're absolutely right, where Die Hard is very cohesive and kind of builds to the really powerful climax. And it's very well put together. Lethal Weapon it never falls apart, but it definitely becomes like, it's an 80s action movie. Here we go. Here's the part where there's the fight scene in the rain, and here's the part where they, like, have the shootout, and we have to have an explosion in there somewhere. You get the sense that they were like, okay, now we need to just start checking off the list of, this is an action movie. We need to have these things.
This is my question for you, Alex, is that fight scene in the rain.
Uh-huh.
Okay. How does it play for you? Because for me, yeah, it's awkward how they get there.
Yeah.
But the fight scene itself, the camera work suddenly, like, did it play well for you? Was there any sense of suspense
danger? It seems hokey to me, even like today. Like, it still seems hokey. I understood, like, try to put yourself in those character shoes. Like, I totally get that they just want to have, like, a duke out with this guy. Like, I understand that they, like,
it's a little sexy.
Like, yeah, it's yeah, like, their justice, and I understand that. But at the same time, like, it just seems so weird that they would, like, all just stand there and be like,
yeah,
we're gonna let this happen.
Like, there are so many moments at the end where the three of us are watching and just saying, Like, there's so many moments where it's like, here's my badge, I'm a cop. And the cop's like, oh, go on in. Take your, like, automatic rifle and just run right into the crowd.
Yeah,
and
you look
like
a civilian. This is normal.
Mel Gibson running around, like, shirtless. Right. And he's like, no, here's a badge. And it's like, you can pick this up in a toy store across the street.
I'm not going to check the badge number and with my radio on my shoulder go, badge number. So could you describe the police officer that owns that badge, please?
Everyone, by the end, everyone knew them at LAPD.
Exactly.
In L.A.
Yeah. Are you like, oh, like, here he comes again, and he's still not wearing a shirt. Yeah. But
one thing that I thought was really fun was Canadian Mist, clearly a sponsor of this film.
Very much so.
A number of times. Yeah. Billboard, like talking about it in the fridge.
It's not enough to carjack the Audi. You have to say, can I test drive your Audi?
Yes.
Although I do have to say, Alex gets the prize for spotting the Donner crew member mess up.
I said, is that a bunch of homeless people or is that crew?
So which part was that again?
It was when the car is going.
So this is near the end of the movie.
Yeah, down the off ramp, and it ends up getting shot in the hood, catches on fire, and like kind of hops the corner.
Oh god,
when it hops the corner. There's like, I don't know, maybe four or five guys, like all in all black, basically right along the edge. And it's like, that's crew.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is back in the days before they had like the plasma monitors and stuff.
Yeah,
like they're watching a little like 4-inch replay thing. Yep. It's like, good enough.
Yeah. And it looked like there was like a tent with them. Like they tried to like hide it and they did a decent job, but everyone could see.
Yes.
Yeah. but the thing is, there's another film flub. It's like Donner has so much energy in his movies that like you tend to forgive the film flubs and stuff. But that scene, like if he were George Lucas, he would have gone back in with digital technology and added it, because when they jump off the roof.
The chain.
No, yeah, when they jump off the roof, the handcuffs are not connected at all. And it's like,
I didn't notice that until this viewing too. And as soon as I noticed it, you were like, oh.
Yeah. Oops.
Big one there.
They probably were like started, and then they like probably legally couldn't keep them connected.
Right.
Well, I think safety purposes.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. So, but for there was not, I mean, you see there's like a connecting thing that's not connected to anything. It's just there for the effect of it. Yeah. And then the Mel Gibson stunt double's like, quick, hold my hand before somebody notices we're not connected. And
we don't want to have to do this again.
Yeah, but we only get one take.
Yeah. it is painfully clear that that's what's happening. I wanted to talk a bit. So, tonally, it's pretty consistent throughout, and then it just kind of becomes crazy action movie at the end. How much of that? So, Alex, this movie was written by Shane Black, as we were discussing, but it was actually, there is an uncredited writer who came in and rewrote it, and his name's Jeffrey Rome.
Boehm. Or Boehm.
Boehm. There you go. So, Boehm. And what he did is Richard Donner, Joel Silver, everyone agreed that the script was good, but it was too dark. So they had Boehm come in and do rewrites on it. And mostly what Boehm did was added a lot of comedic touches. So probably a lot of what we see with the relationships, a lot of the one-liners and things like that.
There was one line in particular that I don't know if Mel read it wrong or if it just was like a product of the time. I don't think it was. I think it was supposed to be taken as being funny. But when they're in the gun range and he talked about two women like being together, two prostitutes, or I guess the one prostitute and the other being the pornographic actress.
Uh-huh.
Mel Gibson delivers the line disgusting, but he's like completely straight with it, which I think it was supposed to be a joke, but I'm not really sure.
I think it was more about them being prostitutes or something.
Okay.
Like saying, prostitutes.
There were like a couple lines where I felt like, oh, that like, I don't know if that was written for comedy's sake and then they just like missed it or not.
Well, it's funny because Shane Black, what he's become known for is that kind of like snappy brand of humor.
Yeah.
And I mean, the smarts are there. You can sense his personality in this script, and you can see it in movies he's gone on to write and also direct.
Yeah.
But part of me wonders, watching it now, I definitely noticed a lot of the differences as far as like the tones and the jokes, and then okay, now we've got to get the plot moving, and you notice how constructed it feels at times.
Yeah,
and I wonder.
There's a couple times where it feels like the foot is on the pedal in terms of plot.
Yeah,
like they're like, oh, we got it too much into the weeds. Like we got to work our way out as quickly as possible.
I really noticed it when so they're at the guy's house, and then the helicopter attack comes, and then the next scene is him talking to the prostitute, and then he gets shot, and it's like, whoa, this is going way faster than I remember it.
Yeah. Yeah. No. On top of that, yeah, because when we were seeing that, I think, Alex, you were the one that said, it was like, wait, how do they know that the cops know everything?
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. it was a guaranteed inclination. Like, it was an assumed fact that they knew something.
There's a weird transition where Gary Busey is just ADRing, yeah, the cops know everything now. Yeah. And it's like, they're like, let's just add that in. We'll cut out all the dialogue in between.
That's sort of another Donner touch, is there's always a lot of ADR in his movies.
Right.
I don't know. Does he just like chew loudly while he's shooting or something? But the thing is about Boehm, you said he was brought in for comedic touches.
Right.
He went on to work on Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yes.
And that is a movie known for being sort of like, you know, the silly Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
He supposedly, there were drafts that he did of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. But before he died, he said to his brother, that wasn't true. That all of the stuff floating on the web was a fake, that he never actually did any work on it. But it's one of those urban legends. Everybody thinks that like he did all of these drafts and drafts and drafts.
Right.
And Lucas was like, no, it must be different.
And just to bring it back to the connections between this movie and National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, he also wrote Funny Farm, which stars Chevy Chase.
Yeah, it was a Chevy Chase vehicle. Have you ever seen Funny Farm?
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Funny Farm, Alex?
I have.
I'm glad we've all seen it, because
I'm so glad not going to be a missing frames on Funny Farm. Oh, my word.
You and me both.
Even when I was a kid and I saw that movie, I was like, this isn't funny at all.
No, it's not.
Wow. It was just, what happened?
But I wonder if the Murtaugh house is in that movie.
No.
I guess we'll have to watch it and find
Although, Boehm also, there's a reference to something he worked on in this movie.
The Lost Boys. That's right.
Yeah, at the movie theater.
Yeah, because he wrote the script for that. But the thing is, Lost Boys came out after this, I thought. So maybe it was a reference that he was... because he would have been on set, like doing on-set rewrites and stuff, right?
I honestly can't remember. And what...
I'm pretty sure Lost Boys was 87.
And this was 87 too, so maybe they were the same year. Maybe they were shooting at the same time.
I bet you that's
the case. We should go back and watch Lost Boys and see if there's a Lethal Weapon reference.
Well, the thing is, I think there was a Beverly Hills Cop jab in this, because at one point after Riggs gets shot and they're walking back to the car, you know, and Murtaugh says, you know, what are the next steps? He says, I don't know, go to Detroit for a couple of months and lay low.
Oh, yeah.
So that, you know, sort of like, I like those types of Easter eggs, those types of callbacks to things. So
no, that's great.
Yeah. The one thing that I will say, the only thing that kind of threw me off with the film is just Mel Gibson's character at the beginning felt like too caricature-ish. So by that, I mean, he's like a little over the top, a little too much in terms of like this like wacky guy.
Yeah.
It wasn't believable in terms of either suicide or like mental illness.
Right.
Like the scene with him about to kill himself, you know, with the gun in his mouth, like that was good. But there were like other moments where it's like where he's like just laughing manically, and it's like, I don't know if I buy this.
Or you mean doing a Three Stooges slapstick gab with three drug dealers?
Exactly.
Actually, speaking of the mental illness thing, like this is, you know, for me growing up, this is the first movie where like there was a character who had what seemed to be a legitimate mental illness, where it wasn't just like,
especially
you're
like,
nuts, man. Like there was like, this was somebody who was really dealing with like a real traumatic thing.
And in like a pretty, like wasn't a summer movie, but it's like an action movie, the big action movie, for them to like address something like that and something like this.
But there was also very much, and this was a hallmark of 80s movies, was the Vietnam connection.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Movies in the 80s were obsessed with, you know, tying it back to Vietnam, because everybody
make
was
it relevant.
Everybody was still working through that.
Yeah.
Also, I cannot get enough of CIA covert ops connections to anything. I mean, if we could work that in every movie,
we really
somehow
need more of that.
I would love it.
Do you think that movies are what have turned all of us, in that generation forward, into conspiracy theorists?
I think they planted the seed.
I think the CIA planted the conspiracy theory seed so that when we heard it, we would all think it was made up.
I think the director's cut is really just the CIA cut of Lethal Weapon. And they put in every CIA connection.
They threatened Donner's child.
They did.
They held her hostage.
They're like, we're taking away Superman 2 from you. And he's like, that happened years ago. I don't know what you're talking
about. So was Scrooged the next movie that he worked on after this, I think?
Because
Scrooge
was
came out in 89?
Yeah.
I think
89. So it must have been. But then he also, he did go on to do the rest of the Lethal Weapon movies.
Yes,
though Shane Black, he came up with the story, for Lethal Weapon 2. But again, they were like, eh, it's too dark. And
that's so funny to me, though, because he's not known. Like, Shane Black is now not. Do you think that, like, they just browbeat the darkness out of him? And that's why you get stuff that's more Iron Man 3-ish.
Right.
Well, would put a smile on his face.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you look at, right? I mean, so the movies, because he went on to start directing, and he did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. That was his debut. Yeah, and that's a
that
really, I mean, it's amazing.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, you haven't. So you might need to do that. Oh, okay. It's superb, but it's also like, it's very zippy and funny. And okay. I mean, it's violent, but in that Shane Black way where it's not overtly like serious. Okay. Iron Man 3, same thing. It kind of, the reason I love Iron Man 3 so much when a lot of people don't like it is because it really pulls the rug out from under you.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people were like expecting a very straight-faced superhero movie, and what they got was Shane Black saying, ha-ha,
well, they got,
I fooled you, but
yeah,
it's great.
They got Shane Black saying, I got Robert Downey Jr. I'm going to have fun with that.
Exactly.
That's exactly what you should do.
But again, not overtly serious. Yeah, and then same thing with The Nice Guys. Very, very funny. And I highly recommend it to everyone. But it is interesting that he kind of kept getting panned. And I haven't seen any of his other movies from this time period. Like The Last Boy Scout, I haven't seen.
Oh, Last Boy Scout is amazing. Have you seen it?
Nope.
Oh. You gotta see. You gotta see. Last Boy Scout is now. If you want to talk about humor that is definitely artifacts of the time, I cannot vouch for anything being non-offensive in The Last Boy Scout, but I can tell you that it is Bruce Willis. It is prime Bruce Willis.
All right,
and Damon Wayans, just when his star was starting to rise. And so, like, they're both working for the camera big
that
time.
That little brief area in Damon Wayans' career where his star was rising and right before it fell
immediately. And now, ironically, he's playing the Murtaugh character in the Lethal Weapon TV series.
That's true.
There we go.
Which I hope everyone is watching. I know I'm not. So as far as what you were expecting from Lethal Weapon, were you expecting it to be as funny? Were you expecting it to be more serious? Where did it fall as far as your expectations went? Like, was there anything you were kind of hoping for that this movie didn't fulfill?
The first quarter fit what I was thinking it was going to be.
Okay.
Which is like very, very like staccato, slow build, you know, get to the action towards like the middle of the film,
right,
and kind of go nuts. But really it got fun. Like, I became invested in the characters, which I wasn't necessarily expecting.
Uh-huh.
Even though, you know, it is a buddy cop film and like it's really based on those characters. I definitely liked the relationship. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
I think it fit what I thought it was going to be for like the first quarter, and then the rest was like pleasantly surprising.
Yeah.
Key question, and I think I know where you're going to fall on this. Christmas movie.
This is absolutely Christmas.
I mean, no doubt.
If you say that it's not a Christmas movie, you are a Grinch.
Yeah.
You are a Grinch.
Check your Christmas spirit because this is absolutely.
It's a through line of the film. I don't know how you could say it's not Christmas because they mention it like at least 10 times.
Yes.
But and even beyond that, it's a movie about finding a new family, finding yourself, finding love, finding forgiveness and togetherness. And that's what Christmas is all about.
It's also about gift giving.
Yes,
giving the
true.
Gift of not killing yourself.
That's true.
This holiday season,
and that's the gift that keeps on giving.
It's true.
Really day
is.
After day,
it really is.
So let's talk about favorite moments, favorite scenes in this movie. Just the things that stand out to you as like when you talk about Lethal Weapon, and if somebody across from you is like, sell me on this movie. I don't care about spoilers. What's the scene in this movie that will make me want to watch it? What do you guys think? And John, we'll start with you. What is the scene you would go to say, okay, here's why you need to see this movie?
I would have to say, it's tough to pick one scene, but if I'm going to pick something, it's going to be something that highlights the characters and the
right.
performances. And it's going to be the scene after the jump off the building when they're in there and he grabs the gun. And he's got it, and he's really going to, like, and Murtaugh is basically calling his bluff, and then he realizes he's not bluffing.
Yes.
That is an amazing scene. And for any other thing that I might knock Lethal Weapon about, like, Donner gets, and this is true throughout all of his filmography, he gets great performances out of people.
Absolutely.
And just that scene, I would say, encapsulates everything that works about this movie. I know that it's one of the darker ones. But then, you know, you pair it with the very end of, you know, giving the bullet back. And, you could watch just those two scenes and you've got basically a 5-minute version of the movie right
there. Right, right. Yeah. No, I agree. Alex, what about you?
So I think mine is kind of obscure, but I think mine is when they're in the bank and they're talking to the banker and he's like, you need to kill that man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like he's loudly stating this. And I understand, like, if you're grieving, like, you're going to say some things that you might not necessarily mean, or in his case probably does mean. But all of his, like literally no inhibition. Like, all of his coworkers would have been like, Gary, good Lord, did you see him? They're over in the water cooler later, like, holy cow, that's not good.
I don't want to work for this guy anymore.
Yeah, right. So, like, that really just, like, stuck out with me. It was like, I mean, now you learn as the film progresses that he's a lot deeper in this. So
right.
He has a vested interest in wanting these people dead because, realistically, they are going to come after him. Yeah. But, like, going into that blind for the first time, it's like, holy cow, they want him dead.
Right. Yeah. And I love Lord. And when Murtaugh leaves and then Riggs just kind of like
staring at him,
just kind of sneaks out. It's like, okay.
Those
scenes are both great. I was thinking of doing the one you mentioned, John, because I do love that scene. The scene I really like a lot, because it's their first kind of action scene together, is when they go to check out the house. They go to scope it out. Mm-hmm. It's the first time we kind of actually see them kind of working back and forth. And even though Riggs ends up killing the guy, it's to save Murtaugh's life. And that's the first time where Murtaugh's like, hey, thank you. Yeah. And then Riggs, after, he's like, that must have been pretty hard for you to say that. But I love that. That's the moment where I think they kind of start to really connect with each other.
I think I pinpointed in like the how I'm saying, like, the first quarter of the film feels like everything that I know. I think what it is linked to is there is not a great built-in transition before the actual case is something of importance to Murtaugh. And the reason, the exact point was when I was talking about food. Every scene transition is based on them going to get food or consuming food.
It's true.
Because they don't have anything else to move towards. Like, they're literally just going through their day as cops or detectives. And that's like the only thing that moves them to the next stage.
Yeah.
And once we get beyond that and finally get into the case, it's like, yes, this is great.
Yeah, it's very, and those scenes do a really great job of giving them the time to find their relationship with each other, which is
they're definitely needed. And exactly. I think it's funny. And I also think it's like a funny bit. Like, I asked, is this like a comedic bit that they're just going to continue to run where it's like they always eat or they always want to go out to get food?
Right.
Yeah. And I'll also let you know that the through line that they go through, because you pointed out when Riggs goes there for dinner, and you said, what's going on with their house? Why is that wall suddenly missing? Is a through line through all of the movies is Murtaugh is continually working on his house.
Right.
And it actually figures heavily in the plot or the ending of Lethal Weapon 3.
Yes.
Well, that's good that he's into home repair, because a car drove through his wall.
I want to know, like,
insurance company is covering him.
Right. Like, I want to know what their conversation was before that. He's like, is it okay if I drive the car in? He's like, well, at this point, I guess I don't care.
Can we move the gifts away from the tree first? No. He'll know something's wrong if all the gifts are missing.
How many kids do you think saw this film, put a note like that up on their Christmas tree, and drove their parents sedan through their house that year?
Probably every kid.
Lethal Weapon strikes again. Every home insurer's worst nightmare.
Yeah, that's right.
So, well, I guess as far as final ratings are concerned, let's say on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the highest, how many, let's say,
what is the category, though?
Let's say Crazy Mel's. How many Crazy Mel's would you give this? John, out on a scale of 1 to 5.
Wow. On a scale of 1 to 5, and I'm sure that nostalgia plays a little bit in this, I'm going to have... you know what? I'll give it. Now I'm trying to counterbalance the nostalgia, so I'll just go ahead and say 3.5.
Okay,
it's good and it's worth seeing. But like 4 out of 5 just feels like that. You know, like 3.5 to me is like a B. Like it's a strong B.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'd go ahead. I think I would say I'd curve up and say 4 out of 5, because I really love this movie. I love the relationship between them. Watching it again, I noticed the seams kind of showing a bit, the transitions between the kind of the story building and the character building, and then just the flat out action. It definitely felt a little messier to me, but I really enjoy it a lot, and I just love the two characters so much, and their chemistry is so great. But Alex, so what did you think? First time seeing it.
So coming in without any kind of history, I think I'm going to give it 3.5 crazy Mels.
All right.
Mostly because a 5 out of 5 is going to be impossible to get.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be a serious score. So that's not saying 3.5 is bad by any means. I definitely will watch this movie again at some point. Thoroughly enjoyed it. But yeah. That was a fun ride.
There you go. And how interested are you in seeing the other ones?
Oh, I'm going to plug them in.
Do it.
I hope all of them focus on a different holiday. Don't spoil it for me.
Well, there you go.
There's no shortage of Mel Gibson's butt, though.
Excellent. That is 100% accurate.
And prime Mel, when he was in shape, you know, I can't begrudge the guy for showing off the goods.
You almost wish he was in Mad Max Fury Road, just completely naked.
I'm comfortable with the way that went. Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. So those are our ratings of Lethal Weapon. Gentlemen, where can everyone, all these wonderful people, find you on the interwebs?
Oh, goodness. Here on the Nerd Party Network, you can hear me on Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast with Matt Rushing. You can hear me on Great Shot Kid, a podcast about Star Wars creatives with Mike Schindler. You can hear me on Words with Nerds with Craig.
You're just a busy man all over.
I can't stop talking. It's a problem. There was an old gypsy woman. Instead of saying thinner, she said, keep talking. And I'm Kessel Junkie Online.
There you go.
Alex.
Excellent. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Alex Beard, MRALEXBEARD.
And I'm at Yay Shondor Man on Twitter. And again, check out the Nerd Party. There are tons of great shows, mostly the ones that I am on, but also the other ones are good too. No, but really, everyone is doing a great job, and I highly recommend checking them out. There's lots of good stuff there. And thank you for tuning in again to another episode of Missing Frames. What do you think? Are you a fan of Lethal Weapon? Do you like the sequels? Do you think Lethal Weapon 2 is better than Lethal Weapon 1? Where does it fall? And also, most importantly, is it a Christmas movie? The answer is yes, it is. But we want to hear what you have to say. So feel free to reach out to
@JoinNerdParty, or you can go to Facebook.com/NerdParty.
There you go.
Or TheNerdParty.com/contact if you want to contact anybody that is affiliated with one of our great shows.
Beautiful. And as we move out of our holiday movies, we want to start hearing from you. What movies should we be watching? There are tons of movies I haven't seen that Alex hasn't seen, John hasn't seen, Brandon, Lindsay, Richie, all of our co-hosts. There are tons of movies we want to watch, but we definitely want to start getting some input from you guys. So just feel free to reach out to us by any means necessary. Just don't come to our houses, please. That would not be appropriate.
I mean, they could come over here if they want.
Yeah, sure. You can it's be nice on an here. Episode.
It is. I like this place.
It's fun. It's good. But gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the show. John, thank you so much for stepping out.
Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. And Alex, thank you.
Of course.
Glad we got to experience
thank
watching this
both.
Again
this
with
is a
you.
Joy. This is a wild romp, a true joy.
Perfect. And there
it's
you go.
It's got to go on the back of the DVD.
And hopefully everyone will have a Merry Christmas, a Happy Holidays, whatever it is. We hope you kick back, watch Lethal Weapon and or Die Hard, the two of the greatest Christmas movies of all time, and enjoy the rest of your whatever.
Ramahana Kwanzmas.